You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to show number 320. Today is Tuesday, November 10th, 2015, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt tonight. And guys, in tonight's show, we'll discuss another award for Andrelton, the traffic situation shaping up for the new stadium, and the untimely passing of Tommy Hansen. So, folks, full disclosure, we recorded a bunch of this show that you're about to hear Sunday night until it was rudely interrupted by a power outage at my house. So the order is going to be a little goofy, and we will get to Tommy Hansen later in the show. But first, guys, news from the Puerto Rican Winter Leagues is that Hector Olivera has been playing in left field exclusively, getting personal instruction from third base coach Buster Buster Bo Porter. Yeah, and Buster Olney tweeted this week that Olivera's move to left is permanent. Neither of the beat writers has come right out and said that, but they've certainly come close to saying it.
I don't know. I saw some. It doesn't feel super permanent. It feels like there's still a little bit of hope. But he has actually two hitting coaches down there with him, just with him. Not just Bo Porter, but there's another hitting coach with him as well.
Kevin Seitzer's been down there with him as well. So, Ham, let's assume this answers who's playing left field in 2016, which we thought was sort of a big question.
Let's hope.
Yeah. But it raises a number of other questions. And let's start with, what will the Braves do with third base? What do you think?
Well, I mean, defensively, you got to sort of assume, it's a strange thing, and this has been said a lot, is that there are a lot more outfield prospects out there than third base prospects.
On the free agent market.
On the free agent market, right? Yeah. And I mean, are the Braves going to pull the trigger this year on a big deal to bring in a third baseman? I don't see that happening, especially with the news, the heartening news that came out about how the revenue for this year was with Liberty Media. So I just don't see a big financial move. So
right, and with Rio Ruiz, you know, maybe a year away.
Year away, and Austin Riley out there as well, right? I mean, so you've got some people waiting in the wings. Defensively, we're not getting any better. I mean, I guess this is saying, I assume, that Adonis Garcia is your third baseman, right? I mean, he had 343 innings or something last year at third base, most of all Braves. He also had the team worst -3 defensive runs saved. So you put Garcia at third, you put Olivera in the outfield, who, you know, the book on him as an outfielder is limited range and ability. So it's going to be a bit of a train wreck defensively. I guess, you know, offensively, it could be our best option, right? You know, Olivera is now our best prospect, which is strange to hear a 30-year-old is our best prospect, but he is. I would take Garcia over Yuri Perez and Swisher and Bourne offensively. So, I mean, it's a head scratcher, though. It really is a head scratcher. It means that they're taking a spot away from Malik Smith somewhere, right? So now there's two outfield spots. If you're really trying to gear up Olivera for the next however many years, 4 or 5 years in the outfield. And obviously Malik Smith is going to – we're hoping he'll be a center fielder. But and it doesn't really – I mean, there's a lot of talent on the free agent market as an outfield, and it's a signal that we're not going for any of that as well. So I don't really get it. I don't really get it.
So Ham, I want to step back a little bit. I want to – completely 100% disagree with you that Adonis Garcia is the third baseman.
Okay.
There is just no way. I mean, if they move...
Who is it then?
Well, I don't think he's on the team right now. I really don't. For them to move Olivera to left field means they did not want to deal with his defense at third base, and Garcia's defense is worse. Garcia is a worse third baseman than Olivera is. There is just no way. Garcia will be on the bench. They have got to be planning to bring in veteran on a
Juan Uribe.
Yeah, a David Fries, Juan Uribe. Exactly. Juan Uribe is the guy I wrote down. Mm. Is that a Juan Uribe type is coming in to play third base? I mean, Kurt, we were going to talk about the offense as well, right? So let's get into that now. I mean, left field, was one of the two places, we'll throw catcher in there as well, left field was one of the two places where they were going to be able to upgrade the woeful offense. So with Olivera's move to left, that place has got to be third base now. One of those two, I mean, they've got to upgrade the offense with the third base position. And you know, Garcia's not going to be the answer there either. I mean, Kurt, how do you see third base playing?
My shot in the dark right now is that Garcia is our starting third baseman on opening day next year.
Did we
just
already
putting it out there.
Shot in the dark?
Yeah, we are now.
Well, I looking at the outfielders, I don't know that there's tons of great ones that are out there. I mean, Justin Upton, clearly they're not bringing Justin Upton back. Alex Gordon is kind of a light hitting guy, right? I mean, I know he hit a home run.
He's going to get a ton of money.
Yeah. I mean, he's already getting paid almost $14 million this year. Colby Rasmus, almost $15 million a year. I mean, even a guy like Marlon Byrd is making $9 million. So, I mean, they're clearly not getting Cespedes. That's a pipe dream. So beyond that, who I'm looking over a list of names here. I mean, nothing, all these are stopgap. And I think Hamilton's totally right. And I'm afraid that it's going to be the situation with third is that they're going to have, just like you guys said, it's going to be Juan Uribe. I don't even know that they pay Freeze. I mean, he made $6 million this year. So it's going to be some lower level Casey McGee, somebody like that that's out there that they're just going to come throw in there for a couple of years, or maybe a 1 year deal with another year of an option, and hope that Ruiz is ready to go by 2017. And then this guy can serve as a backup. And then if Ruiz doesn't work out, that Riley is a year or two behind that. I think that's totally where they're going. That's a cheap spot that they have to fill with two of their higher prospects. I know Ruiz has dropped a little, but I mean, Austin Riley is their number 5 overall prospect, even if he is just in Danville or wherever he is. So I don't know that they're going to have much of an upgrade at all. And if they worry about Adonis Garcia is that it's a mirage, you know, I mean, that there's no way that can carry over 162 games or however many he might play on a full season. So they've got to at least have somebody that can spell and be in there to platoon, something along those lines. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Uribe and Kelly Johnson are both back on this team next year. And it also, I wonder what they're going to do with Bourne, or what they're going to do with
Swisher.
Or
yeah, I mean, the outfield set now, it's Olivera.
Maben. I mean, don't you think that maybe Maben is now much more tradable?
Except that he's not that tradable. Is the thing, as far as the market's concerned. I mean, his second half was pretty bad. I do not think I don't think anyone's going to trade for Maben.
No, maybe he's a throw-in.
He's making $9 million bucks
he's
next
a throw-in
year.
MLB.
Well, maybe I meant expendable.
Well, he's certainly more expendable now, but he's going to be the starting center fielder. It's going to be Markakis, Maben, Olivera. Seriously, Hammy, if Garcia's the starting third baseman on day one next year, I'm going to be so disheartened and disappointed. It cannot be. We cannot go through another bargain basement year like we had this year. I mean,
we're going to.
The
we're
front office came out and said they weren't going to do that. They will not. They will not be embarrassed and have the kind of year that they had last year. And to me, having your starting third baseman be Adonis Garcia is doing exactly that.
Well, is
so we'll
any
see
better?
If they, yes, yes, 100 times yes.
And there's no way with Ruiz and with Riley in their system that they are going out and dumping a ton of money on a third baseman on a long-term contract.
Yeah. I mean, that's but there's just got to be a decent veteran out there at least that's better than Garcia. They're out there.
That's the long-term play, though, is right, is get Olivera ready in two or three seasons when Ruiz is ready to come up. And so, and you've got, you know, then you've got two of your high prospects, you know, with obvious slots. Steve, I just don't buy it. I think that why do it? Why? What do you get from that? Why go out and spend on anybody for next year?
To be more competitive.
But you're not going to be. Your team is bad. From top to bottom. I mean, I'm sorry. I know I'm sort of bought into this narrative. Why invest next year? Why do that? I mean, Nobody's coming.
Because they don't want to be disastrously bad in their last season as they're trying to sell season tickets for the new stadium. They just don't want to do that. It's bad business to do it. I think.
Yeah. But couldn't they sell the promise? You know?
Sell the promise of Rio Ruiz in the minor leagues?
Well, sell the promise that that they're going to spend a lot more money, that maybe if they don't see anything out of the catching position, if they don't see anything about out of the second base position, center field position, I mean, I guess we're going to deal with Malik Smith there, but that they come in and say, okay, well, we're going to upgrade these and we're going to add a top of the rotation pitcher and we're going to bring in three or four big name pieces to close out this bullpen, blah, 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 blah. And that's what's coming next year. So have faith. Once we get into the new building, that this will be a complete team. This is just the last year you're going to have to deal with this. And Turner Field to boot.
Yeah, I just think that unless Coppola is a guest in the TV booth twice a week, every week for the entire season, that message will get lost. I just don't think the average fan is going to pick up on that, remember it, believe it. You know what I mean? There are so many people at work who know that I do the podcast, right? And so they want to talk to me about the Braves all the time.
But this isn't your job.
and there's so much like, what's going on with the Braves, man? Why are they so bad? Like, not even really aware there's a rebuilding going on or that they're sort of building for the future. I mean, and these are people that, you know, go to a couple games a year. So I think the promise of spending more in the future is not going to really help ticket sales. I think it's going to be about results on the field next year.
Hmm. And you think Juan Uribe will bring in more people than Adonis Garcia?
I think that Juan Uribe will have a higher WAR than Adonis Garcia at third, and that will add to the win total. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, guys, for what it's worth, in 27 at-bats this fall in Puerto Rico, Olivera's batting .333 with a .400 on base and a .404 slugging percentage. No home runs, two doubles.
So let me ask this.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't done a fair or foul. Fair or foul, you're on board with this move. And we've sort of broken down why they may do it, why not. I mean, would you make this move if you're the Braves where they are now?
I make the move if they do something complimentary at third. You know, if he was gonna stay at third, I really expected money to be spent in left field. Because there was no one waiting in the wings. Like, that's the part that I don't get so much. They could have spent the money on a good free agent or invested in a trade with some of the pitching pieces for that left fielder. Because left field was open. Now you've got someone waiting in the wings at third base. So in that regard, it doesn't make that much sense to me. I'm on board from he didn't look great at third base.
Yeah.
You know? There are other dominoes to fall, and they need to do that right, or this doesn't make sense.
I think it's a total long-term play. I mean, I said that. What about you, Curtis? You do this move?
Yeah. I think that they can do a cheaper stopgap for third than maybe they could in left. But I think it's a short-term either way. I think that they've got these two guys, and this is the way the Braves are going to play this out. I mean, I think we're delusional if we think that the Braves are already going to start spending $150 million when they move into the new stadium. They built that. The other reason that they built up all this farm system and all these top prospects is they hope that they have a cheap source of talent that they don't have to pay a lot of money to. I mean, I, for one, that story that came out that the attendance was way down, but that their revenue was up.
Their margins were up.
Yeah, that's a disturbing story to me, because that shows that Liberty Media just found out that they can make money by fielding a crap team. And at some point, maybe that's where they decide to go with it.
It's the danger of having a corporation run your team without a heart.
Yep. Yeah. All right, so, boys, Lucas Sims has been impressing in the Arizona Fall League. Over 11 innings, he posted a 2.45 ERA, 3 walks to 11 strikeouts, a whip of 1, including 6 scoreless innings over his last two outings. He was also the starter for the West for the AFL All-Star team this past Saturday night, where he gave up two earned over two innings. So, Ham, how does this jump forward from Sims? Because we weren't really talking about Sims as one of the pieces. How does this change the landscape this offseason or in the spring?
I don't know. It doesn't feel like he's super ready, but it's nice to know. I mean, it's nice to know. I'll say that. It's nice to know. It's nice for him to, you know, after all this sort of imported talent pushed him down in the prospect ranks, for him to fight back, especially after that, you know, weird bus crash this year, to sort of push himself back into the conversation. It's very exciting. You know, I mean, to think that he's got, I heard that he topped 98 this fall. And obviously there's sort of longer stretches in between games, but that's exciting. You know, the book on him, amazing curve, amazing changeup. So, you know, it seems like he's got all the tools. It doesn't feel like he's – it feels like he still needs a little bit more consistency. You know, over his career, he's been a second-half pitcher. And so I guess I will get excited when it comes around. He has the – you know, he's back this spring. He has a good season next year that I think that he's really a major league prospect. So, I mean, I'm excited by it, but it's tempered excitement. I don't think he changes – I don't think he jumps into the contenders for a starting rotation next year.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think the good in it is he got some national pub, Baseball America's, you know, prospect list for the Braves. He broke into the top 10. I think that he potentially becomes a good, you know, trade piece as we start building the team, given that he's probably a year or two away from the starting rotation here. I just, you know, that visibility that he got can only help the Braves.
Absolutely.
You know, as you know, they sort of move forward with moves.
And he's, I mean, I was just watching some of the YouTube clips on him. His three, I mean, when his pitches are on, they're nasty. His curveball is nasty.
Yeah, great curve. Great
yeah.
curve.
Yeah, and so is the changeup.
On his fastball.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And he's getting faster year to year, which is what you want, right? I mean, he's picking up velocity as he gets older. So, I mean, I think there's also, it would be great in 2 years if he was, you know, could keep it together and be on the staff.
Yeah. Kurt, anything to add there?
Well, yeah, I mean, he kind of had fallen off the radar a little because he had a great year back in 2013 in low A, went 12-4, and then it's kind of struggled since then. So, you know, this is one of those guys. I just kind of talked about the glut of talent that they have now. And the key, which we have sort of talked about on the show throughout the course of the season, is if and when they start trading some of these pieces, that they've got it figured out which are the ones to trade. And you would hate, I mean, you would hate if they, like you mentioned, if Lucas Sims becomes a trade piece and, you know, he becomes Adam Wainwright for some other team. So
why do you always have to bring up Wainwright?
Yeah, because it's just part of the whole fabric of being a Braves fan.
It is.
So, I don't want him to turn it around and then see him flourish for somebody else. So I'm excited that we have another pitching prospect and a really good pitching prospect. And I'm hoping that we get to see it come throughout our entire system and not for somebody else.
Yeah. And a local talent.
Yep. That's right.
All right, guys, some other news and notes. So Anderton Simmons won his third consecutive Fielding Bible Award, marking him as the best shortstop in the majors. It is for the entire majors, not just the National League. So, Kurt, we know we have the best shortstop in the game. Do you think his offense will ever become more of an asset?
It's tough to say. He did pick it up this year. Ended up with a .265 average, which, based on last year, was better. And, you know, we've seen some power numbers out of him. It just seems like he's not a very disciplined hitter. He still will at times swing himself into the ground. And so it's just tough to see. He's not obviously a very patient hitter, doesn't take a bunch of walks. So,
although his walks were up this year, even.
Yeah. So I don't think so. I just don't see that he's ever more than sort of a light hitting middle infielder. What would be our expectation as far as being a productive offensive player? 285, 290 with 15 homers type of thing? Is that what we're thinking?
Well, that would be amazing, certainly.
That's never happening, though.
I mean, you know, it's really all about hanging our hats on Kevin Seitzer, right? Reports were that he really liked what he heard from Seitzer and got along with him well. His numbers were up this year. Maybe another year of Seitzer and being able to really work more once he's, you know, knowing the things he knows now, being able to work them throughout spring training, he makes another jump. But, Ham, I'm with you. It seems unlikely, but God, you know, for him to become an offensive force as well as the defensive force that he is would just be unbelievable.
Well, yeah, just in a consistent, sorry, Ham, just a consistent contributor, even more than a force. I mean,
yeah. And you look at those, I mean, you look at his stats. I mean, the thing is, you don't really see any kind of indicator or trend or something to show that he's, that like Kurt said, it's a guessing game. It feels like a coin toss, what Andelton, what you're going to get from him at the plate. I mean, you said that he's, I mean, Curtis, actually, his best homer season, he had 17 in 2013, his first full season, but he only had 4 last year. So I think, and 7 the year before that. So he sort of dropped off a cliff power-wise. So I feel like his power is gone. I mean, his walks went up last year, but not by a lot. And he still had more walks in 2013. So it's not like he's on this trend to get better at the plates. And the strikeouts is the same thing. I mean, they went down a little bit last year, but not by a ton. And his average was up. But he, you know, it wasn't, I mean, he had, you know, he played 50 games or 49 games his first year. He had a higher average. There's no stat to say, ah, he's figured it out. Right. And so that's the thing is there's nothing to hang your hat on. Like you said, I mean, I imagine for him, I'm expecting a slash sign of like 250, 300, 350. I think that's what we're going to get over the course of a career, maybe a little bit higher average. But I think his offensive WAR is going to be less than one. I mean, I think that's what you're going to get from Andelton. And I love him. He's one of my favorite Braves. I mean, I think he makes up for it. You know, he's still going to have a 3 or 4 WAR just because of his defense.
Yeah.
But maybe something's there, right? And maybe but there's nothing to continue on. He just is sort of, he's an average person at the plate.
So, guys, the stories have been out there. We haven't focused on them too much, but there is a disaster shaping up for traffic and access to the new stadium in 2017. Here are some of the highlights, or the lowlights, I guess. There's going to be 2,000 total parking spaces right at the stadium.
And that's the capacity for the stadium, right? No, that's a joke. That was attendance last year, though, I think, for some of the home games. Hey, now.
There's a bus stop across 285. For those of you who don't live in Atlanta, 285 is one of the major highways that crosses over I-75, one of the major highways, all right where the new stadium's going to be. Which was going to take advantage of a new pedestrian bridge whose budget has skyrocketed and will now not be ready for the 2017 opening. There is a plan from the Cobb County Commission to spend $1.2 million annually for circulator buses. That's been panned by a lot of sort of travel groups, given how much traffic those buses are going to sit in. And then this one scared me as equally as all these others. It came out last week that Cobb County Transportation Director Faye DiMassimo is going to resign. Effective November 20th. I'm sure it has nothing to do.
Nothing at all. Just the timing was ironic.
Total coincidence.
Yeah.
And then just a quick sort of personal observation. Like, you know, Kurt, I imagine this is somewhat similar for you. Kurt and I live in town Atlanta near the stadium. My wife was up, went to dinner this past weekend near the Cobb Galleria. This is where the stadium's going to be for dinner Saturday night, and said it was just absolute gridlock. Like 285 was gridlock, 75 was gridlock. The parking lots were all filled up.
Was this a weeknight?
This was just Saturday night in November.
Well, they were playing a game, right?
Yeah. See, that's the thing. There wasn't actually any baseball stadium up there at all yet.
Right.
I mean, Ham. So, with all this, what do you think is the worst case scenario that plays out here? Like, how bad could this really be?
I mean, I feel like we are on the path for the worst case scenario. I mean, the best case scenario is if this doesn't become a national news punchline,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's it, that's it, It's almost if the Braves were, I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. Right? I mean that people don't show up, that the attendance, like there's 15,000 people in the stands for first pitch. Because
that happens all over stadiums across the country, right?
Right. But I think it's going to be. I mean, but you know, that's more like half filled, three quarters filled, maybe. I mean, there's with a few exceptions, right? People are not going to be able to get to the game. There's so many unanswered questions. I mean, I can't even imagine what the worst case scenario is. That it significantly impacts revenue. Where are people going to park? They've not figured that out yet. And they're like kicking this can around saying, well, maybe they'll park it. They've not figured out where they're going to park. I mean, the bus thing is a joke because the bus is right on the streets where all the traffic is.
Right.
Well, and it's going to be very dangerous without that pedestrian bridge. That should not be overlooked at all. The worst case scenario would be somebody getting killed going to and from the Braves game.
Well, I agree. So that would be the worst case scenario, that there are deaths.
Yes. Well, I mean,
related to the traffic.
You laugh, but I mean, how many people that are going to be completely annihilated are going to be leaving that game? And I mean, yeah, there's lots of police presence when you go into a stadium normally, but normally when you leave, there's really not that same presence. They're not really standing around still directing traffic. At least I've never seen that at Turner Field. I don't know that what's going to be different about SunTrust Park. You know, thank God the morons in Atlanta city government aren't in control of where the Braves are playing anymore, because now we've got these really reasonable and rational and professional guys
board.
Up in Cobb County that are handling this with utmost integrity and intelligence. So it's pretty bad.
I mean, what are some of the scenarios? I mean, what did you say, Steve?
Well,
what's the worst case
scenario? I think there is no doubt that the traffic and the gridlock and the lines and all that stuff are going to be national stories. I believe it. What will get real ugly is, you know, a month or two in, if numbers really start to drop. I mean, the Braves surely have to be expecting and budgeting, you know, 80 to 85% filled throughout the entire season, right? And I'm making that up, but I'm assuming that's true. If people get so turned off and simply won't deal with it, and the numbers really drop, that to me is the worst case scenario, when all of a sudden, like, there are stories about the fact that no one's going.
Yeah. And you know it's going to snowball. You know, if the first month it's like, I mean, it's because the way news travels now, social media and everything, a couple of bad weeks and it's just going to snowball. Nobody's going to want to even try to do it. I mean, they've got to get it right out of the gate, and they're not going to.
There's no way.
Yeah, well,
there's no way.
I'm already planning not to go. Like, in all seriousness, you know, and we do the show. We like the Braves. I cannot imagine going up there for a game. I just can't. Kurt, I mean, are you like...
Well, I work up on the 85 side for those who live in Atlanta or don't. There's two major highways. The 285 is like the perimeter that circles Atlanta. Sorry to go through this for people that don't live in Atlanta, don't really know. 75 is on one side of the perimeter. 85 is on the other. So 75 is where the new stadium will be. I work over on the 485 side, which is the east side. So for me to go to a game, I would have to come down 400, go all the way across 285, and then get to that juncture at 285, which is really the worst arc of traffic in the city of Atlanta, which, of course, as everyone knows, has some of the worst traffic in the country. So basically, I would have to leave work and go, not come home, mind you, but go directly to the park. And that would involve me being in the car for probably an hour, hour and a half to get over there. Doesn't sound appealing to me at all.
And you'd be traveling like 12, 15 miles tops, right?
Totally. Yep. And I mean, I guess
just take
maybe.
MARTA.
Right.
Oh, hey, whoops.
Good one. I guess there's a possibility that if it was like a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon game, I might contemplate it. But that does nothing for me. I mean, like going to those restaurants and doing all that sort of 365, all that kind of stuff that they're hoping that people are going to do.
Right.
Because I'm not going to invest that time up there. I'm going to want to get in and get out because the traffic is going to be so bad.
And the restaurants and all that stuff sound great. I don't remember exactly, but you know that they've announced some of the new stuff that's going to be there, and it sounds terrific. But I just can't imagine
until you end up having to pay for, you know, you eat a $18 slice of pizza and you miss half the game because it's so packed that you can't get in and out very quickly. So, furthering the worst case scenario of all this coming.
I mean, I will say the Patriots place at Gillette is sort of what Atlanta is envisioning. There's tons of bars, tons of restaurants, and actually it's moderately priced and it's not that bad. So, I mean, I don't think that's going to be a complete clown show. I just think getting there, like, people aren't going to have time, because even at 2 o'clock on a weekday, the traffic is horrible. Yeah. Right. I mean, there's just no time when there's not bad traffic. So I don't think people are going to make that journey. Let me ask you guys.
Well, so real quick, doesn't Gillette Stadium, don't they have really sophisticated and designated public transportation to get to and from that location?
They have commuter rail. They have. It's a little bit better. Yeah. And it's a little bit more isolated. But just the fact that it doesn't, you know, can make it a destination. They have movie theaters and stuff like that. People will go there, and it's, I mean, I don't think it solves a traffic problem.
There is a movie theater at the Galleria that you can probably go to as well.
So let me ask you guys this, though, because I mean, you guys are in town people, and I as I am also ITP forever, but you know, I mean, the whole story of this move was moving closer to the fan base, right, which is out in Cobb County. I mean, do you think that, I mean, obviously the roads are the roads, the cars are the cars, but do you feel like it's an easier commute for those people, the fan base that they're trying to move closer to? You Cobb County people?
Well, I guess. I mean, I suppose there's going to be some subset of those folks that it's easier to get to. But the second you are across 285, the second you're on the east side, the northeast side, you're really in no better shape than we are in town.
Yeah.
And there's not like there's it like
and there's nowhere to park.
And it's not like it's, you know, the Cubs Stadium where they're putting it in the midst of a downtown area over there. There's all those people that live in Cobb County don't live right in the junctions of two of the most busiest highways in the city. They live out in suburban areas around that area. So you're not going to be alleviating any car traffic, I guess is my longer point, by putting the stadium there. All those people are not going to be walking all of a sudden to SunTrust Park. They're still going to have to get in their cars and drive to the stadium. Yeah. Or maybe there's some Cobb County, I mean, well, I know there are Cobb County Transit buses that are out there. So maybe the people will, maybe they'll have park and rides somewhere out there where people can do some of that. I don't know how much of the traffic that's going to alleviate, but I guess there is one aspect that might help.
All right, guys, a few other odds and ends, a few other pieces of news from this offseason so far. So Diane Toscano, that missing in action Cuban outfielder who we were waiting on all year, he finally cleared his legal hurdles, and he will likely play somewhere for the Braves this offseason. He figures to be a fourth or fifth outfielder. And the Braves hired a bunch of new front office folks this week, including former UGA coach Steve Weber, who will be a minor league pitching consultant. I bring him up because he was Folty's pitching coach in 2014 with the Oklahoma City Redhawks. It was his first jump to AAA when he was with the Astros. So I assume that played some part in his hiring, given his familiarity with Folty. So Curtis, Hammy is actually not with us now. We're back to the Tuesday night portion of this recording. And we have the sad task of talking about the death of Tommy Hansen. So before we get to what will, you know, the news that will start coming over, that will start coming out over the next few weeks, let's discuss our favorite memories of Hansen. You want to start?
Well, I think it's almost like it's such a shooting star type of thing. I mean, you kind of think back, and a lot of it just came back to me as I was reading, and of course, then it all comes flowing back to you. But it was amazing how good he was and the expectations for what he could be when he was coming up in the minors. I mean, 2009, he was the fourth rated prospect in all of baseball.
And the top rated pitching prospect in all of baseball.
Yeah. And that's a guy that was drafted in the 22nd round. So pretty amazing that he could get to that point and that the Braves found such a hidden gem. And it had totally slipped my mind that his place as that talent was the reason that the Braves did not re-sign or released Tom Glavine on his final attempt to play one more season for the team.
Right.
And it was that kind of sloppy situation. And I remember us talking about like when they were going to bring Hansen up, and we were debating about if we wanted them to wait until June so he wouldn't start vesting, or if we wanted him to be brought up immediately. And they did wait until June, and all he did was be as brilliant as we could expect. And then that carried over. So
yeah, and you remember that whole delay. So, they decide to bring someone up, and they bring up Medlin.
Right.
Who none of us had really paid that much attention to or heard that much about. And they bring him up, and they're best friends, right? There's that whole thing. And, you know, everyone's angry because clearly they're doing this about his arbitration clock, but obviously they don't acknowledge it. So a month later or whatever, Hansen comes up and has just an amazing 2009.
Yeah, and finished in the Rookie of the Year votes ahead of Andrew McCutchen, finished third. But I guess probably the brightest memory I have is that first half that he and JJ had in 2011. And we were convinced that he should start the All-Star game that year.
Yeah.
And then he didn't even make the team. And JJ did, but they were both so good. And I think we were both so excited about how the rotation had been constructed and what we looked forward to. And frankly, that was like the end of it. It was that All-Star game. JJ was never really the same. Hansen all of a sudden developed shoulder problems and was never the same. And it's amazing how fleeting it is. I mean, you think about a guy like Steve Avery, whose career was shut short by a shoulder, or there's so many other pitchers that it comes and goes very quickly. A lot of these guys, I mean, Mike Minor, who knows what his situation is, if he'll ever pitch, at least for the Braves, or ever again. So it's an amazing thing to think about that you could be so good and it could all go away career-wise so quickly. Yeah. But man, he was so good.
He was
for that
so
one
good.
Stretch.
And just think about over the last 10 years, and of course, this is pre-Hayward anticipation. I mean, this was the number one pitching prospect. He was the MVP of the Arizona Fall League the season before. I mean, it didn't get any bigger than that in Braves country. And we were just chomping at the bit for Hansen to come up. I mean, you remember, I look back, I couldn't quite remember, but I look back at what the opening day starting five in 2009 was. It was Lowe, KK, Jurgens, Javi Vasquez, and Jorge Campillo. You know, we desperately needed Tommy Hansen up here. And it was so exciting. I mean, again, minus Hayward, I can't think of anything so exciting prospect-wise that we've had in the last 10 years than Tommy Hansen.
Yeah. Well, in that Arizona Fall League, that, you know, that's an offensive-minded league, and he had like a 0.59 ERA that year in Arizona. So I mean, yeah, he was everything he was billed to be.
Yeah, and you know, his fourth and fifth start in 2009, I remember they were both at home. It was the Yankees, then the Red Sox, and he pitched shutout ball against the Yankees. They weren't super long starts; it was like 5 1/3 or something, and then one run ball against the Red Sox. Struck out a bunch of guys. I mean, he walked some folks. It wasn't the prettiest thing, but we had, you know, this rookie phenom shutting down the Yankees and the Red Sox. The sky was the limit. It was so exciting and such a sort of moribund time for the Braves. I mean, it was the future. Tommy Hansen was the future for us.
Yeah, and I think he had a 14 strikeout start against Houston. Yeah, it's just it's really kind of hard to get your head around that you know, and we were kind of talking about this today that you know, he of course his career got off track and they ended up trading him to Anaheim, and I remember we were excited that we could get anything for him out of Anaheim.
Right, we got Jordan Walden, I believe.
Yep. Yeah. Got Jordan Walden, and you kind of now, I mean, it's cliche, and which is exactly what I said to you today, to kind of think of the human side of this and that how it's much more important than the game, but it really is. And I mean, at the time, you're kind of looking at these guys as commodities, like, oh, well, let's shift that piece off and see what we can do to help ourselves. And obviously, his shoulder was gone, and he never was the same pitcher again. But you think about the people in Anaheim seeing Walden pitch really well here and what he was doing there, and I'm sure they were very disgruntled the fact that they had gotten the wrong end of that deal. But I didn't know till today that he lost a stepbrother when he was pitching for the Angels that was very close to him, and so he had to leave that team several times under bereavement. So it's really tragic that that happened so shortly, you know, such a short time ago, and now this has happened to him as well.
I mean, it's so devastating for his family. My God,
it's really awful.
Imagine. And so on that note, Kurt, we were, me, you, and Hammy, we were all texting today with each other, hoping that it's not drug-related. Just don't let it be an overdose. At the end of the day, you know, he's still gone, and nothing's going to change that. But I just don't want it to be a drug overdose. It will taint everything. People will be like, oh, this was avoidable. And of course, it's true if it was. But, it will just taint his memory to some degree. I really, really hope that's not the case. Now, of course, earlier this evening, they released that the initial sheriff's report when they came to the house he was in somewhere in the greater Atlanta area and took him to the hospital, that the initial report was, you know, potential drug overdose. Now, look, it doesn't have to, you know, this doesn't have to end that way. I assume that they come to someone's house and the guy's not breathing and it's a young person, they're going to think drug overdose. But I just hope that that's not the case.
Well, and not that it's much better, but it could be an accidental prescription drug overdose, you know, something like that, which, not that I'm trying to, you know, paint it up any better. It's still a tragedy regardless of what it is. But yeah, we were all in total agreement that we just don't want this shrouded in some sort of negative fashion by any sort of connection to drugs. So,
yeah. And you know, the sad part is, just like when the wife goes missing, it's almost always the husband. When, you know, the young superstar athlete dies unexpectedly, or the musician or whomever, you know, it's usually drugs. But hopefully, just hopefully that's not the case.
Yeah, and you spoke with him. When was that? Do you remember the year when you spoke with him?
It was 10 or 11. It was when we had Billy Wagner, because we spoke to both he and Wagner that same afternoon. And he, you know, and look, he was very gracious with us. You know, he spent 10 minutes with us on the phone. He didn't have to do that. He was down in Orlando at spring training, taking time out of his day. You know, couldn't have been nicer. And, you know, I mean, I'm glad that we have that memory of him. But, you know, it makes it all the harder when you have some human connection with these guys.
Yeah, and just reading some of the quotes from some of the players, it was clear that he was a favorite of theirs. That they, especially Medlin, it's the Medlin one is really
so awful. He wasn't like my brother. He was my brother.
Yeah, it's very heartbreaking. So, it's you don't see obviously that side of it. What the connection that these guys have when they're, I mean, all the traveling and everything else that they do, and obviously some of these guys, Medlin and he, came up through the system together. So you create those bonds just like you do with anybody that you work with, but these are probably stronger because you're traveling a lot with these people and eating meals and maybe rooming with them and all these other type of things. So it's a very formative relationship that you develop between each other. And I grieve for the guys that were friends with him even more than just him as a player.
Yeah. Well, very, very sad news. Rest in peace, Tommy Hansen. So, Curtis, onto a lighter subject. Right before the regular season began, we made predictions about the 2015 Braves as well as the postseason. So let's go back and revisit those questions and see how we did.
Well, it's ironic, I guess, looking at some of these when I went to look back at them, how many of these players didn't end up playing for the Braves. If they did, they were traded or they got hurt. So there was quite a few of those guys. But the first question we start out with was Andrelton Simmons' batting average over and under of 248. Across the board, we all went over, and he did. He batted 265. Next question was about Chris Johnson, who, of course, we traded over and under on 275. We all went under, and we were.
275? Who set that line?
It was me.
Yeah.
Yes.
But my goodness.
Yeah, that was a softball. he batted 235 as a Brave. I didn't even bother to look and see what he did as an Indian because I really, really don't care. More off the scrap heap, reliever ERA, Jason Grilley, who, of course, blew his Achilles out, or Jim Johnson, who, of course, was traded. Again, I only looked at Braves numbers here. You picked Grilley. Ham and I went with Johnson. Johnson had the better ERA as a Brave, 225 to Grilley's 294.
Amazing, by the way, just looking back at those two guys, that those guys both had sub-3 ERA and did what they did. Because it could have been an absolute train wreck from day one, because they had been bad.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
It's really amazing.
And just a couple of really shrewd moves by the front office to bring in those guys on 1 year, whatever. I guess Grilley's got a 2-year deal. Did Johnson have a 2-year deal?
I think Johnson was a 1-year deal.
So, yeah, but and then you were able to turn him around and get Olivera out of it. Hopefully that, fingers crossed, turns out well. So next question was starting pitcher who would have the lowest ERA. I went with Alex Wood. Again, I only went with his Braves ERA, which was 354. Pam picked Tehran. And Steve, extra points to you. You picked Shelby Miller and offhandedly nailed his ERA to the point. You said that you would figured he would serve up something like a 3.02 ERA. He had a 3.02 ERA. So,
God, I'm amazing.
Really amazing. Go back in time and go to Vegas. A lot of money down on something. Another ex-Brave. The next question, over and under on Melvin starts. We went under. Ham, for some reason, went over.
What was the line?
70.
Well, remember, when the season started, he was going to be the starting center fielder, and we figured they would have to, at least for the first month or two, start him to see if they could get anything out of him. Maybe he had turned it around or, you know, work up his trade value, all that stuff. So, yeah.
And it really, I guess there were no other options.
Right. Yeah, that was it. I mean.
Well, no, that's actually funny because we talked about Eric Young Jr.
Oh, right. Yes. Eric Young Jr., who when me and my kids were down in Florida for that first series, that first week of the baseball season, we went down and saw the Braves play the Marlins. And Eric Young Jr. signed a baseball for my kids, as well as Bethencourt.
Nice.
The kiss of death for both of them, clearly.
That EY, that might be a collector's item since he was a Brave for like 5 minutes.
Exactly.
It's like having a Dave Martinez Braves jersey. So Melvin started 47 games, of course, for the Padres. Over and under on Braves wins versus the Nats, the number was 8. I take it back. You and I went under. Ham again went over. Craziness. The number was 5.
Wait a minute. Explain that one again. I'm confused on that one.
Braves wins versus the Nats over and under. The number was 8.
Meaning the difference between the win totals?
No. How many wins we would have versus the Nats?
Against in the 19 games. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So
over
number
under 8. And,
8.
And, yeah.
You and I went under. Ham went over. The number was, in fact, 5. They went 5-14 against the Nationals this year.
Yeah.
The next one was the heartbreaking category, over and under on Hayward homers. You and I totally bought into it and went over. Ham went under. And the number was 18. He actually hit 13.
Yeah.
Which, for some reason, I thought he had hit more home runs than that. Here's a good one. Braves wins. 77.
What was, The number was 77. I so went over, didn't I?
You went over. You said 79. I pushed, said 77. Ham said under. And, of course, we all know that it was 67 wins for the Braves. Bad, bad, bad. Postseason picks.
Yeah.
Across the board, Nats. Wrong. Yeah. You picked Pittsburgh. Ham and I picked St. Louis. You got the wild card right, but that doesn't give you a point. We all went with the Dodgers. You had San Diego and St. Louis.
I didn't pick San Diego.
You picked San Diego and St. Louis as your wild card teams.
Oh, my goodness.
Mine are better. Florida, San Diego as my wild card teams. Ham had Pittsburgh and San Francisco.
Yeah, all right. Half right.
Yeah. AL, you had Baltimore, Chicago, Seattle. Wow. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at how off we all were because mine are equally. No, not one of us even picked the Royals to make the playoffs.
Flashes in the pan.
Yes. So you had Baltimore, Chicago, Seattle, Boston, Anaheim. I had Boston, Detroit, Anaheim, Baltimore, Seattle. Ham had L.A. I'm doing it out of order. Baltimore, Detroit, L.A., the Angels, the Yankees, and Oakland. So we all kind of hit. I take it back. I didn't get one AL team right. Nor did you. Ham got one. He got the Yankees as a wild card. Way to go, Ham.
Now, I think I had Blue Jays Cubs as my World Series.
Well, that was postseason picks.
Oh, so we hadn't even done that. Oh, you're right.
We hadn't gotten to that yet. Our preseason picks for the World Series, you and I had the same picks. Any guesses on what our World Series picks were?
St. Louis and somebody.
Wrong.
Okay.
Dodgers over Mariners. What did the Mariners win? Like 12 games or something?
Oh, my goodness. Seriously.
Ham had an L.A. series, Dodgers over Anaheim. So, of course, we know National League was Mets, Cardinals, Dodgers, Pirates, Cubs, and it was Blue Jays, Royals, Rangers, Yankees, Houston, and of course Kansas City beat the Mets. And
how did none of us pick Houston?
Yeah, how did none of us pick Kansas City? They were in the freaking World Series last year.
Yeah, that part. That part's kind of crazy.
So you picked all the. Oh no, sorry. Ham picked the final four right. He had Kansas City over Toronto. He had the Cubs over the Mets, though.
Wow. That's kind of amazing.
You had Cubs over L.A., Toronto over Kansas City. I had Royals over the Jays and the Cards over L.A. Kansas City in seven for Ham. Kansas City over the Cubs in seven. You had Toronto over the Cubs, and I had St. Louis over Kansas City.
Okay, so this final four we did right at the end of the
postseason.
Season.
Okay. So Ham won.
Ham wins the whole thing.
Yeah, I added the postseason picks in there as well. So
okay.
Ham is the winner, but we'll never tell him. He doesn't listen to the shows that we do that he's not on, so we'll just never tell him that.
Thank goodness. All right, folks. We will be back throughout the offseason as developments occur. And if we're not back before the end of the month, have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. And that is the show. Please make sure you have us in your RSS feeds or subscriptions on iTunes or Stitcher so that you don't miss any of our weekly shows. Sorry, any of our shows. And as always, check us out at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com for past shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at @ATLBaseballTalk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.